This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. The very best bits of today's show. It is a Wednesday, 21st of September. So what have you got for you today? Well, big focus on the Federal Reserve, because late on Wednesday, UAE time, they will make their decision on interest rates. We've been getting the thoughts of a range of experts, including Daniel Richards at Emirates NBD, but also Keith Fitzgerald. He is with the Fitzgerald Group. He's based in Seattle in the United States. What else have we got? Dr. Karim Al Sold from Gulf Capital has been speaking to us. One of the biggest investment firms here in the UAE, $2.5 billion or so dollars under management. And he's made some bold predictions about economic growth for the next 30 years. Essentially, Asia and the Middle East, really strong and good. Europe and the United States, much weaker. And finally, talking employment with Natalie Spree from True Search. New survey suggests that most of us are looking for a new job. Is that really the case? All that to come on the Bite Size Business Breakfast.
It's been the big UN General Assembly. Huge amount of coverage and a lot of eyeballs on it from this part of the world, Nadia.
Yes, indeed. So, as I was saying, there's two important themes coming out of the UN conference there. So, climate change and the environment, Brandy, and obviously the war in Ukraine and conflicts in other parts of the world. They're under the spotlight at the UN General Assembly in New York, where the US sent a very high-level delegation. We had the poet and activist Amanda Gorman. She shared a very powerful poem calling for urgent action to achieve a more sustainable, peaceful and equal world.
We must go the distance, though this battle is hard and huge, though this fight we did not choose, for preserving the earth isn't a battle too big to win, but a blessing too large to lose. This is the most pressing truth, that our people have only one planet to call home, and our planet has only one people to call its own.
So some very powerful messages there, Brandy, coming out of the UN there. There was also a message from the UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres. We heard him talking earlier, and he was calling for the world to work together for global peace.
We live in a world where the logic of cooperation and dialogue is the only path forward. No power or group alone can call the shots. No major global challenge can be solved with a coalition of the willing. We need a coalition of the world.
So there'll be lots more information coming out there, Brandy. I know you guys are keeping across much of the content over here, but we will also be bringing you more updates from there as well.
Right. Let's have a look at the other big meeting that we are watching here in the UAE at the moment. Mr. Richard Dean, this is your World Cup. It's a Fed meeting.
It is indeed. 10 p.m. tonight here in the UAE. Jay Powell and his cronies are going to announce what's going to happen to interest rates. Look, the hot money is on the fact that they will raise rates by at least 0.75%. Wells Fargo this morning saying they should do double that, 150 basis points or 1.5%. Either way, our central bank will follow suit within minutes. So tomorrow morning, your interest rates are almost certainly going to be higher. I am worried that this will cause a recession and that the cure may be worse than the disease, as does this woman. She is Elizabeth Warren. She's a U.S. senator. This was her speaking to Jay Powell a few weeks ago.
You know what's worse than high inflation and low unemployment? It's high inflation and a recession with millions of people out of work. And I hope you'll reconsider that as you drive this, before you drive this economy off a cliff. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That's Elizabeth
Warren.
You
could argue the economy is already in a car with no brakes.
Possibly so. We've been speaking to Dan Richards, haven't we?
We have indeed. Senior economist, Emirates NBD, regular voice here on The Business Breakfast. He too is watching, but listening, moreover, to what comes out of that Fed meeting.
All eyes on the FOMC meeting, from which we are due to hear the latest rates decision at 10 p.m. tonight, Dubai time. Now, we expect a further 75 basis point hike, but what will be key to watch out for will be the new projections and the commentary from Chair Jerome Powell, with it looking increasingly likely that a signal of higher for longer will be given. Now, after inflation came in hotter than anticipated at the latest print, the likelihood that the bank will slow down now is unlikely, especially with the labour market still looking pretty robust. A return from the Fed officials prior to a blackout period was especially hawkish. As such, there is even a fair chance of a further 75 basis point hike at the November meeting, although we will have a number of relevant data points to see before then. With this in mind, the projections for economic growth that we get tonight will likely be significantly weaker than they were in June.
All right. And it's one of those things, the World Bank is warning at the moment that so many countries raising interest rates simultaneously. We've just had Sweden raising its rates by a full percentage point. We're going to get decisions this week, and not just from the Fed, but also from the Swiss, from the UK as well. That so much simultaneous action hasn't been seen, and I think they said about 50 years, and that it could be what pushes the world into a global recession in 2023. But there are a couple of holdouts, aren't there?
Yeah, China interest rates yesterday kept them on hold. Japan has said, OK, inflation may be 2-3% at the moment, but we're not going to raise interest rates because we're worried about the strength or rather weakness of the economy. So we asked Dan, why are these people on a different path to the United States? And most importantly, who is right?
Most major central banks have been doing as the Fed has done in terms of aggressively hiking rates in a bid to curb those high inflation levels we've seen this year. But there have been one or two outliers, not least the central banks for second and third largest economies in the world, China and Japan. In China, the PBOC has been actively easing monetary conditions this year, while Japan has kept its monetary policy on hold. Now, there isn't necessarily a right or wrong approach from these two institutions when compared to the Federal Reserve and others. The domestic circumstances are quite different, with China looking to boost growth in the midst of the ongoing zero COVID strategy, and Japan taking the opportunity to get out of its low inflation trap. And indeed, price growth there, while at multi-year highs, is still far lower than the rest of the world at 3%. It could, of course, prove to end up the careful what you wish for scenario, though. And if nothing else, the interest rate differential has weighed heavily on the yen this year.
Dan Richards of Emirates NBD. We will, of course, bring you that decision tomorrow morning and reaction to it.
Yeah, indeed. 2 p.m. Washington time, you saying? 8 hour difference? Ask somebody who knows. So that is 10 p.m. tonight.
Did you go to the Federal Reserve building?
Do you know what? I didn't. And I feel like I was saying to producer Schroots a little bit earlier, I didn't do the sort of traditional tourist things, although I'm not sure if that is a traditional tourist thing or just a business breakfast geek thing. But even though Washington, I thoroughly recommend it, by the way, for leisure as well as just for work or pleasure, as indeed Haytham Mata was saying in the studio yesterday. He is from IHG Hotels, not to be confused with IHC, the Abu Dhabi holding company that's buying into a Colombian chocolate firm. He was saying they're seeing increasing amounts of people travelling for leisure, and he can tell which ones they are because they stay a couple of days on the company's dirham, and then they stay for the weekend. And in fact, the Marriott boss is just saying they're seeing exactly the same thing. I was looking at an interview with him this morning, seeing people extend over the weekend, and they know that that's for you.
Isn't that what you did? You were there for
exactly.
two days' work, and then...
And it's a bit of... almost the revenge travel that, because it's been so long since we've all been moving around, if you have the opportunity to, you know, be in the States for work and you think, gosh, you know, I haven't had a holiday for a while, although I have, I'll take a couple of extra days. You know, it's been years since we've been travelling properly. Why not? And the Marriott boss was saying they can tell people extending into the weekend. Haytham was saying to us that people are asking for lower rates as they go into the weekend because the company's not paying anymore, right? And if you're in a very nice hotel, I actually moved across the street, full disclosure, to a cheaper property once I was picking up the bill for the rest of my stay in Washington. Literally could cross the road with my bag, didn't even need to get an Uber. But one of the really interesting points that's been made about this, and I was looking at this morning as well, and Haytham was saying we do give the lower rate. We are being flexible on this. We understand what's happening and why people are making this request, is that one of the things that it's throwing up for companies is insurance and who's responsible. Because when you're travelling for the company, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, whatever it happens to be,
happy days.
It's there. It's It's not just their dirham, but it's their responsibility, right? If your laptop gets nicked, if you crash the hire car, you know, if you get COVID, whatever happens, it's in their time. The Saturday, Sunday isn't. So who's taking the insurance policy? Who's paying for the hire car and all the rest of it? How do you split it?
Yeah, and if something goes wrong, it's not an issue until something goes wrong. But if something does, then you've got repercussions, haven't you?
Yeah, indeed. Interesting thought. If this is something that you're tackling as a company at the moment, what are you letting employees do or not do? Please let us know. I'd like to say that I was fully insured my entire trip in Washington.
Glad to hear it.
This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
It is 22 minutes past 7 here in Dubai. It is 22 minutes past 8 in Seattle on the west coast of the United States, and that is where we cross now. Our guest is Keith Fitzgerald, the principal of the Fitzgerald Group. Keith, good evening. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely my pleasure. Thanks as always for having me back.
So, busy night tonight for the Fed. Excuse me, frog in my throat. What are you expecting?
Well, I tell you what, the decision they've got to be making is not an enviable one. You know, everybody's talking about 75 basis points, but I think they are just foolish enough to try 100, rip the Band-Aid and get it off, get it all out of the way. You know, I mean, they've got to get ahead on this if they're going to maintain any kind of credibility whatsoever. It's a tough position to be in.
So we're about 2.5% at the moment. That would take us to 3.25 or thereabouts. Deutsche Bank saying we could go as high as 5%. What's the upper limit for you?
You know, I don't think there is an upper limit because, you know, we've got a situation here that is compounded by three things. First, investors have been burned by the situation very, very badly. We've seen trillions of dollars worldwide get vaporized because central banks around the world are in on it. It's not just the Fed. It's all of these guys with modern, you know, economic voodoo, for lack of a better term. Second thing is we've got lots of companies that, in fact, are still putting up good numbers. So they're caught between a rock and a hard place. And finally, you've got this third sort of leg in the stool. You've got just lots and lots of money that is concentrated in the institutional traders who are leveraged up to their eyeballs. What we saw today was simply a modern margin call that was worldwide. People wanted off the deck because the beginning of the day was driven by, okay, we're going to get 75 basis points. The end of the day was driven by thoughts that maybe we're going to get 100, and everybody pulled back.
You've been looking at the impact it's having on a number of companies in the United States. One of them in your newsletter today, 5withfitz.com, is Ford. And you say they've got a $1 billion inflation problem.
They do. You know, this was a big one. This rocked the markets because so far Ford, which is a key American producer of vehicles, said that they've got things under control. They reaffirmed guidance. But in fact, then there was a surprise report saying that the inflationary supply chain problems may cost that company $1 billion or more in Q3 alone. That got people's attention because suddenly you have a bellwether company that supposedly was near bulletproof having problems. So I think that shocked the markets. It certainly created a lot of panic and fear. People were wondering all of a sudden, is the supply chain problem singly worse than they've been told or worse than they've expected? And naturally it sold off. I think it was the worst day in 20 or something years, if I remember correctly.
What's the mood like when you go out and go on your motorbike and go and have a cup of coffee in Seattle? No shortage of coffee shops there. Because in some ways, some inflation numbers have come off, haven't they? Gasoline, for example, oil prices are lower than they were at the peak in June. Wheat prices are lower than they were. Is it still the big talking point?
Oh, very much so. You know, you've got particularly amongst business owners, ranchers, agricultural, anybody who works two or three part-time jobs to try to make ends meet. You know, energy has come off a bit. But in fact, if you go to the grocery store, you know, my breakfast costs 75% more than it did a few years ago. That is cutting deeply. The mood is tense. The mood is anxious. The mood is one of anger, frustration. People are having trouble keeping a roof over their head. I mean, the thing about this, you know, we talk about rates, really, but don't forget what the Fed is trying to do. The Fed wants people to lose their jobs and have problems paying their bills. That's what rising rates really come down to. And they're talking about demand destructions deliberately. That's got a lot of people's attention. It's a tense time in the United States.
A couple of other stories that you've been looking at in your newsletter, Jack Dorsey and the Twitter situation. And yeah, Jack Dorsey's not an executive at Twitter anymore. So this is effectively Elon Musk versus Twitter. But you say Jack Dorsey is in the middle of this and you wouldn't want to be him right now.
Oh, no way, because the lawyers from Musk team and the lawyers from Twitter are busy deposing him, according to reports and back channel communication we're getting. But the key here is something that not a lot of people have focused on yet, is that depending on what is discovered in the depositions and through all of them, not just Dorsey, but Dorsey in particular, who knew what and when? Because if, in fact, it is determined that Twitter has been lying about bots and spamming and, in fact, has no idea what's happening on its platform, that potentially sets court precedent for the entire social media industry. Meta, for example, is particularly at risk. They've stepped back. As long as Zuckerberg is in charge, they, you know, theoretically have a monster problem on their hands, because every one of these companies has disclosed to the SEC as part of its publicly traded reporting process how many users it has, how much revenue it's deriving. All of those things instantly come into question. So just singularly, I would not want to be Jack Dorsey for all the tea in China right now.
Would you be buying Twitter at the moment? $41 a share. That's down about 33% over the past year.
You know, I've made one or two attempts at buying Twitter, but right now it's too hot to handle. I wouldn't touch it, because our legal system here in the United States has gone from one that is based on the rule of law and logic and common sense to one that has become a game of technicalities. And that's a very sad state of affairs in many ways, but that's a different topic for another time. I think it makes the stock too unpredictable, because, you know, a single piece, a single evidence, a single news item could turn the case. We simply can't control that from an investing standpoint. So I'd love to touch it, but too much risk.
Quick word on Apple, the fifth and final thing in your Five with Fitz today. You say that Apple's going to be raising prices. And I thought, hang on a minute, but we just got the new iPhones and they kept the prices steady. But you say it's prices on the App Store, and B, it's outside the US. Is this a currency situation?
I don't believe so. This is an interesting one, because you're talking about billions and billions of dollars inside their services group. Don't forget, Apple is a company that's on its way to $1 trillion in revenue. So yes, they've kept prices down on the iPhones and many of their pieces of equipment, because what they're doing is building a platform that's global, several billion installed devices. So raising the app purchase prices inside the App Store drives more revenue through the existing device network, which, of course, goes almost always right to the bottom line.
Question in from one of our listeners, Sarah, says, given all this, where should I put my money?
Boy, I tell you what, speaking of Apple, that is right where I'd go. That's where I've gone personally, where I continue to hope I'm smart enough to buy more shares. Think about it this way. You know, for all the changes that our readers, your viewers, everybody in the world is experiencing, they're changing the way they're going to school, paying for their medicine, how their rent's working, energy, fuel cost, everything else. I haven't heard of one person yet anywhere on the planet that is giving up their iPhones because of inflation. The company's going to go to $1 trillion in revenue by 2030. I think the price right now is tremendously undervalued, not the other way around.
You know what? Full disclosure, Keith, I am one of those people who's given up the iPhone because of inflation. I bought a new phone last week and I thought, I'm not paying $1,000. So I bought a Google Pixel instead. I'm not endorsing the product, but it was half the price.
So you are the first person, my friend, that so I can no longer make that statement, because now I can say I know of one person in the world that gave up their iPhone because of inflation. So good on you for making a smart move. But wow, that's news. Good for you.
I tell you what, it's painful making the switch. It really is. But we'll get there. Keith Fitzgerald is the principal of the Fitzgerald Group, joining us live from Seattle. Appreciate your time this morning.
Investments go up and investments go down. Before putting your hard-earned money into any investment, Dubai I 103.8 advises you to always do your own background research. Ensure you're informed to navigate the market and any potential pitfalls.
It's just half the story though, isn't it, Rich? Have you worked out how to turn the alarm off or the sound on the buttons as we got yesterday, Brandy and I?
No, which is why I was 10 minutes late for work today.
You still can't do it, though. If anybody can point us in the right direction of how to work these darn things, then please do.
It's a brilliant piece of kit.
It looks great.
Yeah, it's like Mandarin's a great language. I just don't speak it.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Right, let's talk economic growth, but not short-term or medium-term. We're talking the next three decades. Delighted to be joined by one of the UAE's leading investors. He is Dr. Karim Al-Sol. He's the CEO of Gulf Capital, based down the road in Abu Dhabi. Karim, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Richard. Thanks for having me.
So really interested in your three-decade growth projections. And your simple message is Asia is going to be booming and far outstrip the growth rates that we're going to see in Western countries. I'll let you talk us through the numbers.
Well, we're very excited at Gulf Capital to be expanding in Asia. We just opened an office in Singapore, and we want to play on this investment corridor from the Gulf to India, Southeast Asia. If you look at over the next 30 years in terms of where the growth is, Europe will grow by 1.5 times over 30 years, the US by 1.8 times. The Gulf will triple its GDP, and Southeast Asia will quadruple, and India will quintuple. So if really you want growth long term, you have to be in this Gulf to Southeast Asia investment corridor.
So how do we play that?
As a private equity firm, we've been investing in Asia for 15 years. We've done 14 acquisitions to date. Whenever we invest and buy into a company in the Gulf, we like to take it to Asia, either through acquisitions or JVs or organic growth, essentially. We encourage our companies to become pan-Asians. And every time we've globalized our companies that we invest in, they become much more valuable, and we're able to sell them to strategic buyers or to do global IPOs. So the play on Asia is very appealing, and that's where investors want to be today.
One example I'm thinking of is Matito, the water treatment company that's based here in Dubai. You're clearly an investor in that organization, and I know they've had a lot of experience in Asia over the past years, if not decades. So is that one example, and can you give me a couple of others?
Matito is a great example. When we invested in Matito, it was a leader in water desalination, water treatment in the Gulf. And we financed its growth across Africa, India, Indonesia. And then we had a chance to buy the Matito of China. So we did that bolt-on acquisition, and Matito became a world leader in water. And today the company operates in 25 markets, and we're able to exit our stake to Mitsubishi. And it was a very, very profitable trade sale for us. And the reason Mitsubishi was interested to acquire this business is we delivered to them a global leader operating 25 countries with a very big presence in Asia. So whenever we globalize our companies, especially when we push in Asia, we are able to have nice exits. Another interesting company we invested in, Destination of the World, which was the largest online B2B travel company in the Middle East. We did a bolt-on in Korea. We acquired a company there. We expanded in China, Southeast Asia, and eventually we sold the business to Webjet. Again, global strategic buyers want to buy multinationals, globalized companies. And whenever we internationalize our companies, we help ourselves, and the exits become much easier for us and more rewarding.
But how do these Gulf-based companies compete in what are, in many cases, very sophisticated markets? You talked about Singapore there and others. I'm thinking, for example, I'm looking at your portfolio, ART Fertility Clinics, leading institute in reproductive medicine in the Middle East. How do you take an organization like that into a market like Asia, which is already relatively sophisticated? Or are there gaps in the market?
Well, the case of ART Fertility, we bought 88% in February 2020. And it's a leader in the Gulf. And we expanded it from Abu Dhabi to Dubai, Al Ain, Oman, and we're looking at Saudi as well. But we started looking east. Whenever we buy a company, we start looking east because that's where the growth and the markets are. So now we're pushing very aggressively in India. We opened 16 IVF fertility centers in India and on our way to open 18. And we're looking at an acquisition in Thailand. So by building a pan-Asian leader from the Gulf to Southeast Asia, we create value. And when we want to exit the company, suddenly global buyers are very, very interested in buying multinationals operating across geographies. So that's something very exciting. It's a playbook we have. Whenever we buy a local company, we make it a regional, if not a global leader.
Okay, so I get that. And if you've got a spare $10, $100 million, then you can give it to Gulf Capital and you'll manage it. But for most people driving to work this morning, working as, I don't know, doctors or teachers, we're not in the league where we can invest in a company like Gulf Capital. What are the ways that, that simple folk like us, humble radio presenters, can play this story?
Well, the stock market is very interesting. The stock market in the Gulf and India and Southeast Asia are doing very well. And there's a lot of growth. And the retail investor can buy shares on the local stock market. And I'm very, very positive on growth prospects of the Gulf. If you look at Q2, Saudi Arabia grew by 12.2%. The UAE will grow around 6% this year, and the whole Gulf will grow around 6.5%. The same in India will grow around 8%. Southeast Asia also has a lot of promise. So you can get exposure in two ways, either investing private equity funds like Gulf Capital or by buying shares on the stock markets or ETFs or listed equities funds, essentially.
Finally, I can't let you go without a quick word on tonight. We've got a Fed meeting coming up in about 14 hours' time. Everyone expects them to raise interest rates again. I know a big portion of what Gulf Capital has been involved in is debt-related. What do you make of the rise in interest rates in many markets, including the United States, and, of course, by extension here in the UAE?
Well, for us, we're more of a growth capital investor. We don't do leverage buyouts, so a rise in interest rates doesn't affect our investments. It does raise the borrowing cost on our portfolio companies, and this is something we think about. How do you service higher interest expenses? And we are speaking to all of our portfolio companies in an era of high inflation, rapid rising interest expenses. How do you navigate and do well in this environment? Fortunately, our region is growing so fast in the Gulf, and we are very positive, and it's a nice contrast to the rest of the world. While Europe and US are entering a recession, we're having some of our best years in the Gulf region.
Dr. Karim, always good speaking to you. Appreciate your time this morning. That's the Chief Executive of Gulf Capital, Dr. Karim El-Sol.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
So they surveyed more than 3,000 people across the region, and Bait.com have found that when changing jobs, transferring skills and relevant experience was the biggest challenge. Majority of Middle East professionals ready to resign and, I quote, find their real passion, says this Bait.com survey. Is that the case? Let's find out with the help of our partner at True Search here in the region. Natalie Spree joins us live in studio. And thanks so much indeed for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me. Great to be back.
How did you read this survey? Is it passion or purpose we're after at the moment?
It's a different definition for everybody, isn't it? I mean, what the question is, what does finding your passion mean? For some people, they could be just deeply unhappy in their current role and they feel very unfulfilled. You've got Jeff Bezos that speaks about work-life harmony rather than work-life balance. So obviously, if you're happier at work, you're happier at home. It's not necessarily balancing hours and time. So passion for a lot of people is finding a job you don't hate going to every day. So that also gives you a sense of purpose. There's the other train of thought that's, you know, I love sports or I love baking cakes. I want to fulfill my passion and have a career that's focused on that. So two slightly different trains of thought.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I suppose surveys like this prey on dissatisfaction to a certain degree.
Of course.
If you're dissatisfied, then you're going to have a different opinion, aren't you?
Yeah, and the people that fill out surveys are the ones that are dissatisfied. I don't think the majority of people that are very happy and fulfilled in their jobs are taking the time to fill out these surveys. It's the same as something like Glassdoor as well. Predominantly, it's if you've got a gripe, you want the world to know about it.
Advice, therefore, to those that want to change at the moment. It seems that we've got an environment where change is possible and being embraced at present. So what is your advice to those that want change?
We're seeing a lot of people that want to change the type of industry they're working for example. So they work in product or tech. So they want to keep their functional expertise, but they want to change to an industry that's more impactful, more purposeful, something with social impact, you know, ESG. We're seeing a lot of that. So you don't need to actually change your experience. You're just moving slightly into a different area where you feel you're giving back and you're more fulfilled. However, if you want to upskill or change skills, there's a lot of free resources available to you, a lot of online courses now if you want to learn. I mean, it's all about passion, is all about effort as well. You know, the more effort you put into something, the more you feel passionate about what you do. If you're good at something, you feel more passionate about it, which takes effort. You want to hopefully be working for a company that has good learning and development, that is encouraging people to move laterally, to learn new skills. Now, the first opening statements on what you said about, you know, experience, track records. Yes, exactly. You can't be expected to move into a role with zero experience, but with the thought of, hey, I'm a quick learner. Go do the learning, show a business or show your current employer that you're really committed and passionate to learning about something else and ask them for the opportunity to move internally if that's what you want to do. If you want to move from HR to finance, for example, go and learn about that.
But to that end, and to the point on experience that you made there, and look, you know, you are no stranger to a CV or a resume coming onto your desk, that's for sure. But of this survey, 30% stating that length of service didn't matter in past jobs when looking for new opportunities.
Yeah.
Really?
It absolutely does. Now, you can have one blip on your CV where, you know, you've worked for somewhere for a short tenure. Maybe it was you were sold a dud job, you know, it does happen now and again. It's explainable. But if you are regularly moving because you're trying to find your passion and you've got, you know, 3, 4, 5 roles of less than a year, that's a big red flag for an employer. I certainly look for that. And I know that all of my clients do as well. So please don't feel that it's not an issue, because it will be kind of a black mark against you if you are what we call jumpy, you know. So we need to see loyalty when we're looking for candidates and when companies are looking for new employees. We want to show that you've got commitment, that you've got tenacity and resilience, and you can stick with a company for longer than, you know, longer than a year.
Lots of people have been emboldened by the great resignation. I'm not sure if that's still a thing at the moment. It seems to be the great retention at the moment for a lot of companies. But what of those that say, right, enough's enough. I don't want to be sat behind this desk. I want to pursue my own passion at the moment. I'm going to drop it all and go after it. I mean, is that still, are we still seeing more and more people doing that?
I wouldn't say more and more. We're seeing people that if, for example, you've come from investment banking or you worked for business and you had a really nice exit and had like employee shares options and made a ton of money, and you can afford to go and either do your own startup and something that, or volunteer and be very philanthropic, or those that can take a job in a startup for a much lower salary. But it's not for everybody. I mean, you're going to be starting from zero a lot of the time. You have to have the cash behind you. Now is not the time, with rising costs, you know, uncertainty in various parts of the world, if not all over, to jack things in. If you've got a stable job, keep it. You know, explore your passions outside of work until you are ready. And a lot of that is financially ready right now to be able to take that jump. So I'm not seeing it a lot, quite honestly. There's always, you know, the startups coming every week. So people some are in a luxurious position. Some are regretting the move because they realize that, you know, their passion is not putting a roof over their head.
It's always difficult, isn't it? And I always feel a little bit suspicious. And this is taking nothing away from Bate.com. Great organisation. And the resources are extraordinary as well, to give us an insight into. But with the population growing as quickly as it is here and the workforce growing as quickly as it is here at the moment, 3,000 people being surveyed?
It is tiny. I mean, in the country, we've got, what, over 9.5 million. So 3,000 is very small. You look at just one company like Emirates, for example, it is a very small demographic. So it's quite a broad statement to say the majority of workers want to leave to find their passion. The majority of those surveyed. So it's not something that I'm seeing regularly. As I said, maybe moving to a more purposeful role. But a lot of this is, say, the effort you put in.
Got about 30 seconds, just a little less at the moment. I mean, just in to conclude, market's buoyant at the moment. A lot of people coming into the market.
There's always a lot of people coming into our market here. Candidates are looking more and more into the region. They see the opportunities. As you know, I work in a lot of high growth tech companies. So there's certainly a lot of growth to be had. We're even finding people over from the US, which used to be quite rare, that are looking into moving into the region because the opportunities they have. And the word that we're hearing last year was flexibility, the year before was autonomy, this year it's all impact. People want to move somewhere and have impact.
Natalie, thank you so much indeed for coming in.
Very welcome.
Much appreciate you coming in and sharing your thoughts with us. Natalie Spree is partner at True Search.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.